very much for having me. I know the time's a little bit late. I'm going to suggest that you wait till everyone finishes the meeting, just in case things get a little bit messy. I understand that this is a chevra that doesn't mind if things get a little bit messy. So maybe we'll have it a little bit not so common, if that's okay with you. You'll learn more that way, because you'll be able to see the birds in their natural environment.
You're good though, right?
I was told, I brought the challah, but they said no.
You did fire up the grill.
Are you
So tonight we're going to learn essentially Daf Muntas in Hulin. So for those of you who did Daf Yomi, somewhat fresh in your mind. But otherwise, as you know, if you want to identify kosher mammals, unless you hold like a chazan ish, you look and you see if it's maligator or mafish fire. So if the animal chooses cud, has split hooves, that's it. No further questions necessary. I know Rabbi Chaim Goldberg was here last year and he told you that if it's a fish, you don't even need, it's not pure and kaskeset, it's enough if it has scales, kaskeset, and that's it. And of course, if you want to eat chagovim, which Ashkenazim don't go for, but if you are of the tradition that chagovim are permissible, all you need is karsulayim and use it to go. So the bottom line is, when it comes to birds, we don't have any specific definitions of characteristics which would identify kosher and non-kosher birds. Rather, the Torah has a list of non-kosher birds. The list is in Parshas Re'eh and Parshas Shemini. Combine the list, any bird not on the list, by default, is going to be kosher. The Gemara, actually the Mishnah, Daphne Tess and Kulin, it notes that there are physical and behavioral characteristics by which the birds can be differentiated. And these behavioral and physical characteristics, it's a bit enigmatic what their source is. The Bali Tosfos have the Shita that the source is actually Noah, that when he was on the table, he did research and he was able to figure out signs by which the kosher and the non-kosher birds could be differentiated. And he was so excited that the Pasuk says when he got off the teva, he was the only one in the world to accomplish this. He won a carbon from every kosher bird and every kosher bird. Whatever the source, we, for a long time, did rely on these signs. And then already in the time of the Gemara, if you remember, Daf Samach Gimel, already there are stories where the Gemara decided that the physical signs that were given in the Gemara and the behavioral signs were insufficient to prevent people from making a mistake in eating non-kosher birds. And as a result, our tradition, and this is very strong among the Ashkenaz tradition and the overwhelming majority of the Sephardic traditions, is we only eat a bird if it has a Mesora, if it has a tradition of permissibility. What exactly a Mesora is a Machlokas Rishonim, but either it means that we know that this bird was accepted as kosher since the time of the Rishonim, or it means that we know that this bird was accepted as kosher since the time of the Gemara, and the assumption is if it was kosher then it's obviously not on the list of forbidden birds. What I'm going to discuss with you is the Torah and various issues that have come up and how we're trying to figure them out. For those of you that have looked outside, you probably noticed a lot of pigeons around this area. So I didn't bring in a regular pigeon, but a pigeon, which is the biblical Yonah, that is, according to the Gemara, the quintessential kosher bird. It shares that title with the Torah, with the turtle dove. And those birds have all the characteristics of a kosher bird, and they're certainly kosher. The Ramah does not quote the Isser Beheter. It's not clear if he agrees with the Isser Beheter, but the bottom line is that the Isser Beheter felt that the pigeon is so kosher, any bird that looks like the pigeon would be qualified as not being not kosher. I know it's a double negative, but figure that out. Now, everybody here knows what a pigeon looks like, right? So a while ago, I was making a presentation for the Chavkeith, and they gave me an open budget. So I called, he's one of these like enigmatic old gentlemen that lives in the Midwest, you know, he's a pigeon breeder. I called him up, I said, send me three of your most interesting pigeons. Prices of no issue, because it wasn't my credit card. And he sent me one bird which was really interesting, but it's really bad for presentations. It's called a trumpeter. It's a pigeon that doesn't sound like a pigeon. It sort of sounds like it's playing the trumpet, which is really interesting if it would trumpet on demand. But I just felt putting it out here and waiting till it decides to enlighten us with its noise. It's not going to... It wasn't good for presentations. The other one was interesting colors, but then he sent me this bird. I have here. If I can. Will people object if it flies? No one's okay. Do you see? We'll catch it. Did you look at it? Look at it. Do you see it? Is that two stories high?
Yeah.
Did you
have the library open?
Well, I
have the
hatch
tag.
No, it's not going to be open.
Ruby's going to hatch
tag.
Why?
I want to make sure the front door is closed.
Did you see it? Did you see it fly?
Yeah.
Did you notice that the bird looked very much? That bird looked very much like a pigeon, well, not like I hoped it would, but training its first presentation. But what it's last. But the bird, when it flies, it looks like it has four sets of wings. It has regular pigeon wings, and then on the bottom, it has very. It has. Don't worry. We'll get it later. It has very unique feet, where it has very thick feathers on its feet. If you look at the common pigeons outside, you're never going to see pigeons with feathers on their feet. But this pigeon, it has something pigeon-like about it. But on the other hand, there's a lot of features that are not so pigeon-like. While there's never been a machlokes about the pigeons, all the different breeds, there are few that have abnormalities, but there are none that are completely off the cuff. I have here a chicken, which I can't get to see if I really don't know. This is a regular chicken. Okay? And, I mean, I just have it here. I'm not going to talk about it. If you know what a chicken is, great. If you don't. But I have here another chicken, which is much more interesting.
Is that batter on the bottom? Like breadcrumbs?
Questions at the end.
Okay.
We have here. It's called a Polish chicken. It's a very ancient breed of chicken. We have paintings that were made in the 1600s, and this is exactly how the bird looked then. And what's interesting was it was discussed by a lot of the Achronim from the 1700s. And the Shaila that was asked, if you're sitting in front of it, you can't see the Shaila, you might be able to see the Shaila, is the back of the head. What happens is that those feathers grow very long. And as those feathers go longer and longer, the bird develops some kind of abnormalities in the skull. And eventually, the skull can get holes. As a result, the shaila that was asked by almost all the Achronim was, is this chicken a trefa because of the likelihood of it getting a hole in its skull? And the bottom line among the Achronim, the Inpsak, was that really, this bird is, it's not a trefa if it doesn't have a hole. And what we do, actually, we shuck these every so often at the OU. And we have an interesting way of checking, because it's not so easy to check a skull, because if you just peel back the skin, it's very likely that you will just tear the skull, and then you can't verify it. So we have a little colony of dermistid beetles. Don't have too many questions about this. And you put the skulls in, and the beetles can very quickly clean off the skull. And we can see if there are holes. And we've done this on many, many skulls. We've never found a hole, which probably implies that, you know, obviously with us, a bird with a skull, a hole in its skull is not going to live that long. So presumably, the modern version of this is a little bit more robust and less likely to get a hole than the older versions. But if you look at the scientific literature, the scientists have discussed the various ailments that this bird has, which do cause holes in the skull. It's just not as common as it was 400 years ago.
Is there a chazaka of a trefa that you assume there's a hole till
no,
you find
no,
out?
No, the minhag is after check. Okay, now this bird, though, represented an interesting shaila in the Sorah, because while many of the Achronim were discussing whether or not this chicken was a trefa because it had a hole in its skull, the author of the Simul Chadasha, which was short, many of the other Achronim noted that this is a chicken. It's just a chicken with abnormally long feathers. And if you take a look at these two birds, you notice, even though they're approximately the same color, they don't really look the same. But nobody was ever challenged was able to prove that this isn't a chicken. And this was very much accepted as a chicken, even though if you look at it, it has a lot of abnormalities when you compare it from a more common kind of a chicken.
What were they calling it in Hebrew, this chicken?
They usually just said that it had long feathers on its head. It didn't have, to the best of my knowledge, a breed name. Sometimes they called the long feathers Spearlock, but that was just a description. That was not a name of the breed. The idea of having breeds of chicken is something recent. I mean, it was only really in the early 1800s. I'm going to blame it on the British. I don't know whose idea it was that you're going to, you know, everything has its own name. But really, it was very infrequent that you had birds that were identified by breed. The Romans had a few breeds, and this is from the nobles of Hungary and Poland used to raise these. And it's interesting because the Dutch called it the Polish because Pol is Dutch for something on the head. And the nobles of Poland were raising it, so they called it Polish after Poland, so everyone calls it a Polish. But the bottom line is, it's a very bad chicken to raise if you ever want to have a pet, because any other chicken is going to tear it apart because of the weaknesses it has in the skull. So this is not something that people were raising for food. It's something raised as an abnormality. It was preserved. This is its representation of what it looked like 400 years ago. It probably wasn't eaten. While we know that this is the bird that was in Hungary, we do not know what the average person was eating in Hungary or Poland or anything like that 400 years ago. For those of you that have been following all the controversies that have happened, whether it's the Breckel or the broiler or whatever year you decided to look at all the controversies with chickens, we have no idea what was eaten in Eastern Europe 400 years ago. The reason was is that chickens were very different. The chickens that were in Europe were rather small, not productive, and in fact, there was nothing to eat and their eggs were no good. Later on, they imported from Asia, these massive chickens. These massive chickens, which were edible, and in America, they developed Leghorn, which produced a copious amount of eggs. So those took over Europe, and that's what's raised in Europe now. And the indigenous birds from most of Central Europe, to the best of our knowledge, are not. But the bottom line is we have the idea that this is a chicken, anything that looks like this we're going to accept. And this guy, even though he's Mishuna, I have another chicken, which is a little bit more differentiated to you. So if you look at it, you could see what I was saying about the. It looks like it has four wings. We can take pictures later.
Complain about a chicken. Just 5 minutes.
Now, if you look at this chicken, you'll notice that this chicken, by the way, is very cooperative. You can't really see where he's going. This is called a silky. For those of you that are looking, you'll notice that, first of all, it looks like it has fur and not feathers. If you looked closer, you'd see that his skin is black. And if we were to check him, which I'm sure we're not doing, you'd notice that his meat is also black. Now, this scientists all agree that genetically this is a chicken. But the rabbinic authorities are not quite on the same page. One time in my first...
What color are his eggs?
Regular.
White?
No, brownish. Tinted. In my frustration, I convened a group of rabbanim in a certain Medina. Very chashuv rabbanim, you've probably heard of them, but I don't want to mention their names. And I was trying to get them to issue a psak that this is kosher. And the rabbanim, you know, put a chet-shaped table situation, the rabbanim sat there, and they looked at it, and they said, well, how do we know it's a chicken? You know, when you present a question, you don't get to answer questions. You just present your question, you have to stay quiet. So the rabbanim are talking, and they asked one of the bachrim there to grab, it was a machina, the high school kids, to grab one of the high school kids in the hall. Now, I'm not really holding on what the times were, you know, what this mind was of the school, but I'm pretty sure these kids were cutting class. Anyways, they grabbed the kid, brought him in. He was a freshman, a little kid. And he looked, he did all of us sitting in a half circle. The kid, you could tell the kid's like heart's melting. He's going through a little panic, really, really shaking. And one of the rabbanim, points to him and goes, "What is that?" The kid never actually looked at the bird. But anyways, he passed in this kid. He goes, "It's a rabbit." This rock kicked him out, told him to leave, and told him welcome to get a better kid. Okay? 2 minutes later, they come with their next captive. The kid is equally petrified and also felt he was looking at a rabbit. Now, when you calmly look at this bird and you say, "Why did the kid think it's a rabbit?" I don't want to be clear that these kids were not just coming to class but they're doing something else bad. But the truth is that this bird was discussed by Marco Polo in the 1200s. And he, I don't know what conclusions we have about Marco Polo, he also described it as a bird that looks like a rabbit. But the bottom line is that what all the rabbanim said, and there's been a number of tshuvas that have been written about it, it's called the Tarnagol Hameshi, in the modern tshuvos, but don't be confused, because in the older tshuvos, when they say the tarnagol that feels like meshi, not the tarnagol hameshi, but there's some other adjective, they're usually discussing a different type of chicken. But now, when they say tarnagol hameshi, the last 50, 60 years, the tshuvos that are published, this is what they're talking about, it's called the silky. And nobody's really sure if it's a chicken, even though scientifically it's a chicken. And what we tried to do was, and this is an ongoing project, was figure out if it thinks it's a chicken. So I don't know if any of you have ever been to Kleisenberg Farms in the Catskills. They have about 4 acres of different cages full of animals. And we took a bunch of silkies, and we had a cage that was 100 feet by 100 feet, which isn't as big as this room, but it's about, I don't know, 2/3 the size of this room. I'm not good spatially, but it's something like that. And they put in this room, they put peacocks, they put guinea fowl, they put pheasants, they put regular chickens, and they threw in these silkies. And the silkies flapped with the other chickens, they bred, and one of the babies that hatched, I can't make this up, just gets weirder and weirder, it was sort of like half and half, meaning instead of it having the features of both parents, it had on one side the features of a normal chicken, and on the other side, it had features of a silky. It had the weird feathers, it had 5 toes instead of 4 toes, a lot of weird stuff I was very excited about. I saw it the day it hatched, but I couldn't take it then, because chickens, the day they hatch for the next 3-4 days, are very fragile. And I figure I'll come back at the end of the summer. It's already going to be 2 months old. I'll be able to have something for their abundance and say, look, at least it breeds with the chicken. And when I came back at the end of the summer, this baby chicken, I called up the day before I trekked up there and said, I'm coming to get this silky. They go, it's waiting for you. And I came up and it was missing. So I was never able to finish my research, and I was never able to get one to breed, just, you know, that it was absolutely clear that this is a combination between a silky and a regular chicken. And obviously, because of collodion, I can't force the issue. So it's sort of nature takes its course. But the point is that with our Misora, when we're sure that it's a chicken, well, we consider it a chicken, and a bird that looks like a chicken, we consider a chicken. But even though we can make scientific arguments to indicate this is a chicken, as long as we're not certain that this and this are the same kind of bird, out of our suffix, we have to refrain. And to the best of my knowledge, there's no kosher certification agency anywhere in the world that Ashkenaz kosher certification agency that is accepting the silky as kosher. And for those of you thinking who wants to eat it, the fact is they're raised in mass, available in New York or any of the ethnic markets, they sell it. And if you go to Chinese restaurants, I know there's a fan somewhere in the room, they serve wonton soup. The wonton soup that we get, it's not real, because real wonton soup has to have a wonton. And this, in Chinese, is the wonton. So you could imagine I'm not going to get into it, we're not talking about food right now, but you get the idea. Now, even though with birds like chickens, and there are many other species, we're very mystical whether or not they are the same species, and we have to verify that before we can decide if it's kosher, there are certain birds which we're not as nervous about. Now, these birds, the reason why we're machmir, that we have to be certain it's a chicken, and we can't just say it's probably a chicken, is because people sometimes made a mistake, the Gemara talks about it, and it happened to many subsequent generations as well, where they thought they had a kosher bird, and then they realized that it was predatory. Now, one of the rules is a kosher bird cannot be predatory. However, according to the the Razah, according to the Rush, according to the Tur, according to the Machaber, there are certain birds that can never be predatory. And one of those birds... this is a goose. It's a baby, because it's easier to transport, quite frankly. Can't fly all the time. But if you notice, there's a major anatomical difference between the goose and the chicken. If you look at the chicken, you'll notice that it has a pointed beak. And if it wanted to, it could peck at somebody. It can't really tear you apart, but you could sort of imagine that beak being capable of tearing meat. The goose, with its beak, it can bite you. It can actually bite pretty hard, but it can't tear. And we have a machlokis as to what is the definition of duris. But the general assumption, according to at least the Bali Tosos, Rashi felt that the definition of a duris is that... The definition of a duris is that it holds its food with its hands. The Tosos felt it's able to take bites out of a living animal. That's the definition of a duris, which fits much more with the definition of a lion. And a chicken at least is capable of tearing food, or tearing a living organism apart, while the goose can swallow food whole, but it can't get bites out of it. So the tradition among us, I've said before, the Rush, the Tur, the Razah, perhaps the Rabbeinu Chananel, was that any bird that has this kind of a beak and this kind of a toe, by definition, can't be a doris. And for many, many communities, and it's still the case with a number of Sephardi communities, even though we require a mesorah for something like a chicken, or for most birds, any bird that's a waterfowl that has this kind of a beak and this kind of a foot, if we don't have a mesorah, we can assume it's kosher because it can't be a predator, and as such, we're unlikely to confuse it with a non-kosher bird. All right? Now, you'll also notice that this... this goose has a tiny crest that it's developing, a little version of that. And it was also the subject of the machlokes. And what's interesting is all the birds that are domestic, the ducks, the geese, chickens, and pigeons, they each can develop the crest, but the only one that's likely to make a hole is when the crest gets dramatic. The birds that have smaller crests, just like a little extra long feathers on the top, there was never a suffix that they would cause perforation of the skull, and there's no creativity. Does anyone have any questions, concerns, or comments?
Is the color of the bird?
So some people are makbid on color, but that is generally not the accepted tradition. Meaning, we don't shecht any birds that are not white. And there's a very there's a very logical reason for it. When we take off the feathers, we don't dip them in boiling water before we remove the feathers. So since we don't dip them in boiling water, the feathers don't get removed as nicely as the goyim can get it off. So a white feather is not as noticeable as a black feather. So all the birds we shecht are always white, just because the housewives don't mind the white feathers because they can't see them, whereas the black feathers, they return into the store. But the black feathers... Okay. Do you have any other questions or comments?
According to the goyim, does that taste like chicken?
Oh, you don't have to have the goyim. You can have the So I've actually done one better. The Sephardim, there are certain communities, particularly the Persian community. I don't know if anyone hears from Persia.
Yeah. Yeah, I came with the bird.
Oh, okay. So Rav Ben, are you Tehrani?
Yeah.
Okay, so Rav Ben Chaim, you heard of Rav Ben Chaim? Yeah. So he passed if this is allowed. And his Sheikhtim shefted it, and they said it does not taste like chicken. I know. So we've never had genuine wonton soup. It's disappointing, but the reality is, unless you're Persian...
And when it's cooked, it's actually black still? It doesn't
yes,
change?
Yes, yes. And I don't mean like dark, it's black. Charcoal black. Yeah. Okay. If I know you were here, they would love it. We could check it, we could show everybody. But okay. So if you're following, the last issue which should be glaring in your mind is, if we need a misora, and we're very makbid not to eat a bird that doesn't have a proper misora, is how do we eat the turkey? Now, I did not bring a turkey, primarily because they smell really bad. And my presentations are never a success because about 15, 20 minutes into my presentation, people start leaving, and I don't blame them. I want to leave too, but I feel it's not appropriate. They don't smell good. So I don't have a turkey here. But the turkey, if you don't know what a turkey is, you can look that up at later. The bottom line is the turkey is from North America. So how do we accept the turkey as kosher if it doesn't have, if it can't possibly have a mesorah? And unlike, let's say, the waterfowl, there's no similar bird, at least in appearance, that is kosher. So first we'll get to the real reason, which is probably the Nitziv, it may shift dog or simon cluff base. And the Nitziv says, if he had been asked originally about the turkey, he probably would have answered it. But now that all the flies will eat it, it's very difficult to say everybody made a mistake.
Something like that.
There's a lot of truth to that. But in terms of how it became so popular, it's relatively interesting because the turkey, unlike most other culinary transitions, gained popularity really fast. We know that, I've been told, I don't know this for a fact, but that Columbus hit America in about 1492. Already in the 1540s, the Bach mentions the turkey, which it's not clear how common it was, but he wasn't discussing a very exotic bird. So it seems that in the span of just 50 years, the turkey was sort of exported all over Europe. The explorers, they discussed how the Indians had sort of an endless supply of turkey, and they took advantage of it and imported them into Europe. We're not sure exactly the early history of the acceptance of the turkey, and there are a number of theories as to how the turkey became kosher. One of the more entertaining theories is that the turkey was first posthumed as kosher by the Rivash. Now this is entertaining because for those of you that read the fine print in the introductory remarks in front of the Sfarim, you know the Rivash, while being accepted as one of the Gedolei HaDor in Spain, he was nifter in approximately 1408-1409, which would mean, even if the first thing Columbus did when he got the money took back to Spain was run to the Rivash, he was 90 years too late. So it's highly unlikely that the Rivash passed into the turkey's kosher, but some people do say that it's from the Rivash. And I have a theory, which is my own theory, I'll throw it at you, it's as entertaining as the first theory, which is that if you look at a female turkey and a female peacock, another bird I don't bring to presentations, so they're also really smelling, and they fly, so that's a double whammy. But the female peacock and the female turkey look very similar. And possibly the Rivash was asked about the peafowl, which obviously were found in southern Europe, and perhaps that's what he was matir, and later on that was confused with the peafowl. I'm sorry, with the turkey. The problem is we have no record of this in the writings of the Rivash, so we're throwing it into pure theory. This could just be everybody made a mistake, and the Rivash never spoke about the turkey or the peafowl for all we know. The other theory is that the turkey came to Europe via North Africa, and since it came from North Africa, what ended up happening was the Sfardim, they got it first. Many of them still, the Rambam was not yet published, so they were still paskening essentially that you could accept a bird based on the Simani Kashrus. The turkey has all the Simani Kashrus. So when they saw the turkey, the Sfardim accepted as kosher, and then they gave it to the Ashkenazim, and the Ashkenazim accepted as Kashrus based on the Psak of the Sfardim. A final theory is that if you look at the crazy placey at the end of Simon Pei Beis, he has a kuntris. It's about 8 pages. It's kuntris p'nei mesher, and he was trying to argue that a certain kind of waterfowl is kosher. But one of the points he makes, which historically, this is what he's claiming, is that until the publication of the Rambam, the accepted sak was like. The Rambi, Moshe Bar Yosef. The psak of the Rambi is that the way we identify a species, until now I was saying this is called a chicken, and this is a species, and if this is the same species, then they're both kosher, and if these two are not the same species, then we know this is kosher and this is not part of our Mesorah. The Rambi felt that the way that I just explained to you a species is wrong. We do not identify a species by looking at how it appears on the outside and saying, well, this looks like that, this looks like that, they don't look the same, so they're different. The view of the Rambi was that when we say shachin v'nidme, that birds are the same species, we mean that the nidme v'simani, that the simani kashrus are the same. So if we wanted to figure out if these two birds were the same species, we would shach them, we would look at the feet, which, by the way, their feet are not the same, just parenthetically, you would look at the feet, you would look at the zefek, which is one of the simani kashrus, you look at the korkba niklof biyad, and if all the simani kashrus were the same, then we would assume that they were both the same type of bird, and they're both kosher. And for those of you that have looked at different birds, you know most birds don't have the exact same anatomical features. So cutting them open, it's an expandable explanation. But it wouldn't really drastically increase the number of birds except as kosher. Interestingly enough, and I know you did a shlita here in Bezrasha, maybe next time you'll chef turkeys and chicken simultaneously. When you look at the turkey, it doesn't look like a chicken. Its face doesn't look like a chicken. Its body doesn't look like a chicken. But the simani kashrus are identical. The foot of the turkey looks like the foot of the chicken. It even has, if you look at this rooster, you know it has a spur that's like above the toes, it has a nail. The turkey has that also. It has an identical foot to the chicken. It's bigger, but identical. The korkuban is the same. The zefik is the same. The beak is the same. So it, anatomically, at least as far as the simani kashrus, not much else. But since the simani kashrus are the same, according to the Rambi, it would seem that the turkey would be considered to be a chicken. And perhaps, and this is the theory of the Kunchus Pinesha, the Yuntaichus in Crazy Placing, that even though later on, Chai Yisrael sort of moved away from the Rambam and now accept the view of the Ramah. And the way we understand the Ramah is you can only identify a species based on if it looks the same. So since, let's say, these two birds don't look the same, they're not the same species. But since earlier they accepted the view of the Rambam, based on the Rambam, that's why they accepted the turkey, because at least the simani kashrus resembles that of the chicken.
So it technically means a species of bird or
yes.
An actual bird itself.
Right. So
is it a pheasant?
So we don't,
any
right.
kind of pheasant or
so
is one
so pheasant
pheasant.
Is hard because the scientists haven't yet figured out what pheasants are. So we can't use pheasants as an example. But for example, I spoke to Rav Belsky's about geese. And scientists have identified 18 different species of geese. Now I didn't present all of them to Rav Belsky, but the ones that I presented, Rav Belsky cares about science. Look at them, they look the same. They're the same bird, even if science would consider them to be separate species. And the same thing happened with certain kinds of partridges. They're called Alectoris partridges. We had four, there are seven, but we only had four. We presented four to Rav Belsky, and he said, look, they all look the same. Who cares what scientists say? They agree together, they look the same, they're the same species. But on the other hand, I never presented the silky to Rav Belsky because there was no point. I knew what his answer would be. But even more similar birds, chickens that were presented to Rav Belsky, he'd say, it doesn't look like a chicken to me. So how could we say it's part of the Masar if it doesn't look like a chicken? And sure, we could cut it open. There's korban nitzav yad. It had a zefik. It had all the simani kashrus. But if it didn't look like a bird, so the psak of Dolyu based on Rav Belsky was we wouldn't accept it as the same species. Not to say chas v'chili is not kosher, but it needs its own Masar. Okay, I think I'm out of time, but does anyone have any questions, concerns? So geese are a problem to shecht for a simple reason that nobody raises them. I don't know. No, I mean, I don't know if you're into starting your own business, but go for it.
But, do you have a serve geese? No, that's
what I'm saying.
Every so often, there were a number of Al-Habatim that were very interested in any kind of exotic kosher bird. They would fund any shiloh that we would send to Rambam. So I used to get calls from all these farmers that had exotic birds because I take the whole plot. And then if Rambelsky passed in the discussion, we would check them all and they would eat them. So we used to have all these farmers with all these 70 geese and all these exotic birds. And there are people who raise them.
You know, whales?
Well, we that was available.
Yeah, but it's very limited.
Right, so that's your fault because you're not serving it. Do we have any other questions, concerns, or comments?
Louder.
We can talk about the taste if you want.
No, that's kind of
what
we eat.
What?
The
goose? They're delicious. These are amazingly tasty birds. Yeah, with all due respect. I'm pushing that maybe you got an old, like, tough kind of gammon. So, about a time or you want?
We can go if you want. You want to slip out?
I don't have any. This guy has got no meat on him. You got to get the right age. Okay. So I guess the last bird, if we have another 5-6 minutes, is the quail. People were mentioning the quail is a very interesting bird. First of all, what we identify in America is quail. is completely ill-defined. I don't know if any of you are history buffs, but there was this idea in America many years ago which was manifest destiny. And it was almost a religious ideology of the colonists when they were moving across the West, that they believed that God had chosen them to be the chosen people, and it was their destiny to rule and conquer all of America from sea to sun to shining sea. And sure enough, as they were migrating in the middle of the Midwest, they were starving. And they went to their priests, and they said, "We're starving. What are we going to eat?" And the priest wanted to show them that they were whatever they thought they were. So he said, any bird that they found running on the ground, they called it a quail. In the United States, there are 48 species that are identified as quail. So it's a drastic number, and you should know they downgraded it because they already split off a whole bunch and decided they're partridges now. So if you look at the old dictionary, it's even more than 48 species. And what's interesting is not a single one of those are the biblical quail. So in America, if you call up a farmer and you say, "I would like to order a quail," it's 50-50 if he's going to give you something that's kosher. Instead, he might give you one of the random birds that are indigenous to America, for which we have Bulbasaur, and which we do not accept as kosher. The quail that we eat, I can tell you the Latin name, because telling you its quail doesn't help you. It's called the Coturnix coturnix, and the farmers call it the Pharaoh quail. Pharaoh as in paro. It's not so much now, but as 30, 40 years ago, they would gather in the northern part of the Nile Delta, in the millions, and they would migrate over the Mediterranean, disperse in southern Europe and central Europe, and then they would collect again, fly back over the Mediterranean, and disperse over the Nile Delta. When the wind came, and this has been documented a few times, and blew the quail off course, since they're not strong fighters, they would fly as hard as they could, and if the wind was stronger than them, they would land, exhausted, all over the Sinai Desert. So these particular quail, told to us in the Torah, right, the Slav, their behavior mirrors exactly the Slav as described in the Torah. Also, the quail are relatively small, so you can understand the idea that they were, you know, the Torah talks about a certain kind of a sifa that happened to them. They would gather, because you're not going to grab them one at a time, because they're so small, you would grab them. Despite this, I would say, overwhelming archaeological and ornithological evidence that the Slav is the quail, which is the Coturnix quail, the majority of the Rishonim do not identify the Slav as the Coturnix quail. Rashi and Tosfos identify the Coturnix quail as a kind of perdix. Perdix is a partridge. We do accept the partridge as kosher, at least the partridge that Rashi identifies as perdix, but it is not migratory, and it doesn't form large flocks. And again, it could have been a nace. There's no way to say it's a nace. But it's a different kind of a bird, entirely from what we identify as quail. In America, nobody calls that bird quail. And then the other possibility, the aruch, identifies the Slav as the pheasant, which again doesn't migrate, and it's not found in great numbers in great flocks. But again, if the nation of Lamalu and Ateva, that doesn't discount it. The OU does accept the quail as kosher, and there have been caterers who do serve quail. They're just very hard to shaft because they're very, very small. And the other problem is that we won't let anyone shaft them. We always demand that when the OU does a shechita of quail, that somebody who can identify quail be there, because of the possibility that when the quail are ordered, the quail that you get end up being the non-kosher quail instead of kosher quail. And this has happened a few times where somebody ordered quail from a butcher who orders the Coturnix quail, the Pharaoh quail, and instead he got, in that case it was bobwhite quail, which are completely different species and one which we don't have in the soil for. Okay. So thank you very much.